Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks. That's 200 of the best stations in the U.S. and XM Channel 166, a program note. Starting next week, we'll be on XM 244, if you want to listen on satellite. XM 244, America's Talk. This episode aired on May 5th, a Sunday, 2013. It's episode 976. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung, Galaxy, iPhone, or other smartphones are worth at Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk high tech at 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S., and we get calls from all over the world, which I love. You're welcome to call. Just use Skype or something like that, and it'll be free because you're calling a toll-free number inside the U.S., 888-827-5536. We can talk about anything you want. I have in front of me the two hot new phones out there, the Galaxy S4. You can ask me about that. That's the new smartphone from Samsung. And, of course, HTC's new flagship, the One, which is something I've had for a couple of weeks and have loved. Now I'm playing with the S4. Did an interesting thing. So I walked in today, and it has an application on it called S-Health. On the phone, and Samsung's been kind of pushing the idea of this phone being a life companion. I don't know about that slogan. A life companion. In fact, when you turn on the phone, it says that. Hello, I'm your life companion. Your little plastic pal who's fun to be with. But one of the things in here that does kind of have to do with that is S-Health. So I thought, well, let's see how accurate it is. I turned it on. It's in my pocket like any phone would be. And as I'm walking in, it counted my steps, it counted the distance, counted the calories. And it did it very accurately, 0.7 miles, 1,428 steps. It makes a little graph. You can also use it to keep track of calorie use, exercise. And my comfort level, this is bizarre, but because it has inside thermometer and humidity measurements, I know that it's 69 degrees and 52% humidity. My comfort level is quite good, it says. I need a phone to tell me that I'm comfortable. Well, it is my life companion. That's exactly what a wife would do, right? You're not comfortable right now. Get a sweater. Do you think the phone will tell me to get a sweater? Very interesting thing, huh? So I like the idea of this. That's an interesting additional feature to a phone. And why wear a Fitbit or a pedometer when your phone is counting your steps? It says you need 10,000 steps and all of that. So I'm very intrigued. It's amazing where we're going with these things. These are the computers that most of us will be using most often. Not the desktop, not even the tablet. Steve Jobs famously said we're in a post-PC world, but I think he was thinking the iPad, and I think maybe it's the iPhone and the other smartphones that really are the computers of our future. So you can ask me about that. What phone is right for you? I'm glad to help. Without prejudice, without bias. I know it's a religious war. Did you? And Samsung's taking this seriously. New Samsung ads. Did you see the high school graduation party ad? all the kids, all the cool kids have Samsung Galaxy S4s, and all the old parents, the grizzled elders, have iPhones. And the kids are doing, you know, all the things you can do with the Galaxy S4. They really love that tap in the phone, beep, and sending the picture, which I have yet to do. I've had a Galaxy phone for years, have yet to do that. Not with the S2, not with the S3, not with the Galaxy Note 1, not with the Galaxy Note 2, not yet with the Galaxy S4. Nobody does that. But anyway, you can tap the phones together and send a picture. Beep. They don't mention it started with bump on the iPhone before anybody else did it. And then they I don't know why Samsung does this, but they're kind of into it. They show the two young ladies, and I don't think they're painting their nails, but they're doing something, and they don't want to touch the phone, so they wave their hand over the phone. The kid who's eating ribs, phone call comes in, he waves his hand. The parent goes, "Wow, you just waved your hand and answered the phone? My phone can't do that." Kid shows his dad how he can change the channel on the TV with the phone. And the parents are baffled and amazed by this new magical wonder. It's insulting to everybody involved, including the Galaxy S4, if you ask me. But, you know, they're trying to show off the features. And somebody asked me, why do these companies, and all of them do it now, junk up Android phones? There's a pretty brisk market for the Nexus 4, which is an Android phone that is pure Google, doesn't have any of the extra stuff that HTC and Motorola and Samsung add to the phones, the health stuff, the wave your hands. This phone, I can scroll with my eyes. This is hard work, by the way. It's much easier to scroll with your finger, but you can look up and down, and the page will scroll up and down. There's no known use for this, in my opinion. But why do they put all this stuff on top of what a lot of people really want, which is a pure Android experience? Why don't they give us the at least give us the choice? And I think the answer is that that's the only thing that distinguishes these phones, frankly, is the junkware they put on top of them. That's what really sells these phones. So they're afraid just to sell you a kind of average, generic, just like everybody else product, even if that's what you wanted. And you cannot make this phone be normal. You cannot turn it back into a pure Google experience phone. Even if you root it, you have to then put some third-party software on it that doesn't always work, is a little wonky, a little funky, the Cyanogen mod, things like that. Seems like there's a market for just like, can I just have the vanilla? Can I have vanilla instead of choco berry coconut swirl with bubblegum, please? Just vanilla. Seems like there'd be a market for that. 8888 Ask Leah, we could talk about that. I am going to do a study on battery life. I'll do this for next week. Because one of the things you see immediately with these phones, and it's true in just about everything we care, we're mobile now, right? Laptops, tablets, everything. You want long battery life. You want to get through a day. On a phone, to me, that's 12 hours. On a tablet, that's probably 8 to 10 hours. On a laptop, that's 8 to 10 hours because you're not going to use it constantly. But they just can't seem to do it, and that's because battery technology hasn't made any significant advances in the last decade. So maybe next week, I'm going to take some time to research this. I'll talk about some of the interesting things that are happening, like supercapacitors and things that might be changing battery life. Things on the horizon, they aren't here yet, that might make this, I mean, the dream, and I think it could happen in the next few years, is that you plug your phone in, or you better yet, you plop it on a charger without wires. 3 minutes later, it's ready to go, and it'll last a week. Is that impossible? No. No, it's not. But the technologies are just emerging to do this. I'll also talk a little bit about what you do with the existing battery technology to maximize it, because I have to say I'm disappointed. Neither the HTC One nor the Galaxy S4 get through a day. They don't have what I consider a full day, a 12-hour battery life, more like 8 hours. And actually, I ended up buying a gigantic case for my HTC One, what they call a Mophie case, which adds, it probably doubles the weight and size of the phone. But it also doubles the battery life. It's a little battery pack that you add to the phone. And you when you're charging the phone, you're charging the battery pack, and you give it enough time, both are charged. And now when you run out, it's like only old-timers like me will remember the reserve tank on the old Volkswagens. The really, really old Volkswagens didn't have gas gauges. This is probably in the 60s. They didn't have gas gauges. You were just supposed to drive them till they ran out of gas, and there was a little lever on the floor that you'd flip, and it had like a pint of extra gas. You'd flip on the reserve tank, and now you're really desperate because you've got to find a gas station within a pint of gas. That's kind of what this is. This is like your reserve tank for your phone. You use up the phone to about 20%. You flip the little switch. And then, fortunately, it's another full charge. But it sure adds to the bulk of it. It seems not very desirable. When are we going to get better batteries? And what can you do to make sure that you get the most battery life? So that we'll save that for next week. This week, my assignment to myself was to make a Facebook page for my mama that was 100% private. I think I've succeeded. We'll talk about that later on in the show. Also joining us, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater expert. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. 8888, ask Leo. Talking about smartphones, and I was showing this Mophie case. Mophie is a case I've used for many years on the iPhone. The iPhone doesn't have a replaceable battery. When a phone doesn't have a replaceable battery, your only choice to get more battery life is to get an external case or external battery. This case has a battery in it, the Mophie case, and I have it on the HTC One, which also doesn't have a removable battery. And somebody in the chat room says, does that case make your phone heavier? Yes. In fact, I really can't think of a case that doesn't make your phone heavier. If they could invent a case that made your phone lighter, I'd be very interested. This actually makes it considerably heavier because it's a battery. Batteries are heavy. So one reason you don't have big batteries in these phones. They want to make them thinner and lighter. It's our fault. I take full responsibility. Because we're asking this. We want it all. I want more capability. I want a bigger, more beautiful screen. I want thinner and lighter. I want better battery life. You can't have them all. Because you make the battery smaller, you get less capacity, right? All right. Let me see if Heather Heyman has got a call for us. Heather, good morning. How are you today?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Did you rock out last night again?
No.
Three nights in a row would be too much.
Yeah. I got to cut it off somewhere.
Yeah, got to nap one night.
But of course, I watched a movie that took a weird turn and gave me nightmares.
So oh, no. What was the movie?
I haven't caught up on sleep. I Melt With You, Rob Lowe, Jeremy Piven.
I Stopped the World and Melt With You. I love Jeremy Piven. He is the agent in Entourage. He's wonderful.
Right.
And he has a new British movie where he's like a 19th century British guy with a top hat and a goatee.
Oh, yeah. I saw something about that.
It seems strange casting.
He seems to have a lot of range. Anyway, let's talk about phones, should we?
Yeah, why not? That's all I've been talking about all day. I just thought we'd talk about something else.
You want to take that hard right?
Yeah. What do you got for me?
Okay. Dale in Brooksville, Florida.
Let's say hello.
He's having a situation.
Hi, Dale. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather. What can I do for you, Dale? Hello? Did I push this button? Hello, Dale! Am I doing something wrong?
John?
Dale, stay there. Whatever you did. What do you think is going on? It's like his battery died or something. Dale?
Well, should we
Who
try
else should I take?
Line?
Let's try another one.
I'll
put him on hold.
Pranav in New York.
I don't know if I can put him on hold. I don't think I have that capability.
Oh, let me try.
Can you put him on hold? Probably. We're learning. We got a new phone system. It's all new.
Huh. And we haven't had this exact situation yet.
Wait a minute. I can do something. Is that hold? It just makes it do things.
It seems a little froze.
Well, it makes some little thing go on there. I don't know. Tech support for the tech guy. Pranav, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pranav.
Hey, Leo. Hi. Long-time Twit listener, big fan.
Thank you so much. Twit, we should explain for the radio audience, is my other job. My middle of the day job, my noon job, Monday through Friday.
Your 24/7 job?
Yeah. It's our podcast network on twit.tv.
Right. So I have a question to ask you, Leo. I'm in a long-distance relationship right now, which really sucks. And what I'm trying to do is record my vocals over an instrumental track, like a karaoke, and send it to my girlfriend.
I melt the world and live with you. Well, you know, it's interesting you should mention this, because my friend Steve Martin, you might have heard of him, comedian, banjo player, just did an album, right. Just came out, by the way, wonderful album. Love mm-hmm. Has Come to Stay. And he did it with Edie Brickell. Remember Edie and the mm-hmm. Bohemians? So, and he told me the way he did this was wild, is he would play his banjo into his iPhone. He'd push record and play a track into the iPhone, and then he'd mail it to Edie, who would then write the lyrics, record her vocals in GarageBand, and mail it back to him, and now they have a demo. So
wow,
what you need is something like that. Now, where are you going to get the music track?
I'm downloading stuff from iTunes. They have a lot of karaoke songs.
Perfect, so. Perfect. So you download an instrumental track. Are you a Mac or PC? Are you doing it on the iPad?
I do it on my iPad on GarageBand.
Yeah.
And I tried recording my vocals using like the built-in iPad mic, which is not like really good. And I was wondering if you had any recommendations for entry-level cheap microphones. I know a couple of USB microphones that plug into the iPad's camera connection kit, which is nice. But I'm looking for something that's cheap and
big. Now, do you have a 30-pin or a lightning connector on yours?
No, the 30-pin.
Thank goodness, because nobody has yet come out with lightning, to my knowledge. Lightning connectors for these things. The one I've been using, I don't think it's cheap, but it's got a 30-pin connector on the mic, and it's an amazing mic. It's from Apogee Electronics. It's called the Mic, M-I-C, but it's $200. So that's probably out of your range. But, boy, is it great, and it works. It does exactly what you want. It's a studio-quality microphone. Uh-huh. What's unique about this is it's digital. So the 30-pin connector has two ways to get audio into the iPad. One is analog, just like, you know, analog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, analog. Waveform
that's converted to bits in the iPad. The other is digital. And this, to my knowledge, is one of the few, maybe the only mic that is digital. So the conversion's done in the body of the mic. And then the connector sends bits, which gives you, frankly, the best possible result. So that's one choice.
The one I'm leaning towards is, I saw this on Amazon, is something called a Samsung Meteor mic. I wonder if you've heard of it.
Yeah, I like Samsung stuff a lot. I haven't tried the Meteor, but it's the same idea. Is it digital is the question. Let me look and just see if they talk about it. It's kind of cute. It's like a little capsule mic, which would be more convenient. But remember, the size makes somewhat of a difference. Actually, it's not that small, is it? See, it looks smaller than it is, but then I see it next to the... I haven't tried... I'm going to buy this. I'll try it and let you know. Meteor mic.
Oh, fantastic.
It says, perfect for your home studio, ideal for Skype, blah, blah, blah. One of the largest condenser diaphragms of any USB mic available. That's a good thing. Which means it's also taking power from the iPad. Headphone out for no latency. That's important. When you're using a mic that converts to digital for a computer or a tablet, you can't monitor the audio through the computer or the tablet. There's too much latency. There's delay. So what you really want is something like this. And Samsung, like the guy whose hair was cut off. These have built-in headphone jacks. So you have that come directly from the mic, so you can monitor yourself, which is, I think, fairly important. This looks really good. Haven't tried it. It says it works with GarageBand. It does need the connector kit, which you have, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because it's pure USB, so you'll need the camera connection kit. Now, the good news about that is you'll be able to use it with a Lightning-based iPad because they'll have a camera. I presume have a camera connection kit for that. You know, this looks great. I've used Samsung mics. They made one of the very first USB mics I used. I was told about it by Roger McGuinn of the Birds. He was using it to record his Folk Den albums. So that was the Samsung first USB mic, and it was very good. So I would expect this to be excellent.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get your recommendation on it.
Yeah, I haven't used it.
It's really good on Amazon.
Yeah, no, that looks good. What is the price on Amazon?
It's just $70.
Much better.
$9.
Well, as I said, I've tried the Apogee. $200 is very pricey. That one's direct in. This one, which means you need a special connector and so forth. This one is just a plain old USB mic. At $70, that sounds very appealing. But I'm ordering one right now. So
thank you so much.
Hey, what a nice idea! So you're going to record a love song for your girlfriend and send it to her?
That's the idea. A little sappy, but yeah, whatever.
That's not sappy at all. That's so sweet. I hope that I hope you two can live next to each other sometime soon.
Hopefully.
How far away is she?
She's in New Delhi, India.
Oh, that is truly a long distance. Sorry to hear that. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Leo.
Take care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Moving on, our next caller of the day, Bobby in Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Bobby. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Good afternoon. How you doing this evening?
I'm well. How are you, Bobby?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm a truck driver slash computer technician also. Got a comment and a question.
All right.
You opened the show about the battery life.
Yes.
Now, I have the Galaxy S3, which I love the phone.
Oh, great phone.
But I had an issue, and I got tired of going to sleep at night, all of a sudden waking up, and the phone's in orange because it's almost dead.
Yeah.
And I run Juice Defender, and I went on the Sprint Network and their website. They have a link to it that has recommended tweak settings.
Yeah.
That really helped with the battery life.
I am going to have to look at that. Sprint recommended settings, and it's for the Galaxy S3 specifically or in general?
I looked up my phone for the S3, and it really helps. I can now put it on a charger, and I think it only drains maybe 12% overnight.
Wow. Now, tell me, can you give me a kind of the overview? What do they recommend, turning off stuff or...?
It goes into detail. Sometimes your screensaver timeout on the screen.
Yeah.
Other detail recommendations. I can't remember right off the top of my head. It was like 17 pages.
Ah! Wow.
And it's a bunch of things that could be on that's recommended to be off.
See,
that you really don't use on a regular basis.
But it kind of begs the question, should you, I mean, why do they put that stuff in then? You shouldn't, seems to me, a phone should just work. You shouldn't have to go through 17 pages to get it to last all night.
Exactly. And that leads into the next one. I'm out of the contract, and so I'm actually month to month, and I can upgrade. But I was looking at the S4, I don't think it's worth it, or what's your opinion, to go from the S3 just to extend a contract 2 years to the S4?
No, the only reason I'd go to the S4 is for its screen. And maybe if you went to a Sprint store and you looked at it just to see, it's a much higher resolution screen. So it is very crisp, although the Galaxy S3 screen was not bad at all. I love the Super AMOLED stuff, which is a very vibrant, rich color, very dark blacks. This doesn't have a whole, and I think this is one of the reasons Samsung loaded it up with things like the Samsung Health app, because there isn't a whole lot different. It's a little faster, but I don't think you think the S3 is slow. It doesn't have as good battery life. You know, you're sacrificing battery life for more features. I'm trying to think if there's any, that's a really good question. Is there anything in here that would make you go, wow, it looks exactly the same. It isn't even any bigger because when they made the screen bigger and they made it 0.3 inches bigger, they did that by decreasing the size of the frame, the bezel. So it doesn't even look – in fact, if I put two side by side, you'd be hard-pressed to figure out which is the S2 and which, or S3 and which is the S4.
Now, I was also doing research because I think in August they're supposed to be coming out with a new edition of the Galaxy Note.
Yeah, and I like the Note. I'm a Note fan. So the Note 3, but we don't know what they're going to do. And what's become apparent with Samsung is they don't really want to change. I guess they don't want to change what works, right? So
exactly.
So they've got a working thing, and they just don't want to mess with it. I think if it's the biggest difference you will notice is screen size. If the screen does not wow you on the S4, then I would skip that. Maybe wait for the S3 to come out, the Note 3 rather, to come out, see if you like that. That's going to have, I don't know how big the screen on that'll be.
The I've been seeing it could be 6.3 or most likely 5.9.
So the current Note 2 is 5.5 inches. But what is missing on the Note 2 is the resolution. It's only 720p. This is 1080p. So if they would, to me, if they'd leave the Note the same size screen, which is about as big as you can pocket. I guess if you're a truck driver, you don't mind having a big, you're not carrying it in your pocket.
Now, that'll lead to another question. With the upgraded processor of the 1.9 quad in the S4, could that, because one of my biggest features I like is the mobile hotspot.
That's not going to change that at all. In fact, battery life is the key to mobile hotspotting, isn't it? Because it drains your battery. So I would stick with the S3 for that. The faster processor does not make that big a difference. The S3 is fast enough.
Yeah. All right, sir. You have a wonderful day, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Bobby. I appreciate the call. The Samsung has muddied the waters, I think, a little bit with this new phone because it looks so much like the old one. See, this is what Apple's smart about. Every other year, they make the phone look so different. And it's the same thing. You know, they learned this from Detroit, right? The 1956 Cadillac had fins. Oh, now the 55 looks so old. Same car, but it's got fins. I have to have it. It's big fins. Then the year after that, it's something else. It's points on the bumper. Oh, that looks modern and makes the other thing look old. And Apple's done the same thing with the iPhone every other year. They're smart because they know most people have two-year contracts. They don't want to do it every year because they don't want you to feel like you have to, you know, oh, no, Apple's pushing me to upgrade every year. They want you to feel like, no, that every other year is kind of a minor upgrade. And then every other year, you know, every second year, oh, that's the big one. That's the one you want to do. In fact, we are in that the minor upgrade year, right? The 5 came out. That was a big change from the 4S. So the 5S or whatever they call this next generation, if Apple is true to form, will be just a small upgrade, mostly a software change, right? Maybe not now. I'm hearing rumors there may be more. Maybe a fingerprint scanner? Really? A fingerprint scanner? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Is Scott Wilkinson looks like he's in the chat room, but we're trying to get him. We're not having any success getting him on the Skype, so we'll have Scott on in a little bit. We'll get another call in, though, right now. Scott in Pasadena. Different Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
How are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I am outstanding. Any better, I'd have to sit on my hands to keep from clapping. Love your program. have a quick question for you.
Yes, sir.
I have a Nexus 4. I love the phone. As a matter of fact, I walked away from an iPhone 5 for the Nexus 4, which for me is very unusual because I've been an iPhone 5 guy. iPhone guy. But I love the 4. Unfortunately, as you probably know, it's tied to one carrier. And in my experience with that particular carrier has been a disaster. Is there any reason that Google cannot make this phone work with Verizon or somebody else? It's supposed to be an unlocked phone.
It is an unlocked phone, but it uses a technology called GSM. Only T-Mobile and AT&T use GSM in the U.S. Verizon and Sprint use a technology called CDMA. For some reason, Google decided to make the Nexus 4 not only GSM only, but they don't have LTE in it either. You're using it with T-Mobile because that's pretty much the – you could use it with AT&T, I think, but you wouldn't get LTE. I think the Nexus 4 is a great phone. I know a lot of people love it primarily because it's pure Google. It doesn't – I was talking about all the cruft the manufacturers are putting on these other phones.
That's the vanilla you were talking
it's
about
vanilla.
Earlier in your show.
It's vanilla.
And I love it.
And some people like vanilla. I like vanilla. And it's also $300. It's half what the other phones cost. But in my opinion, when Google released this, it wasn't intended to be a mainstream phone. It was intended to be a developer phone. That's why they wanted to keep it inexpensive and simple.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't trying to get it on every carrier. They made no effort to get it on any other carrier. They didn't want it on a carrier at all. They made an unlocked phone that you could buy directly from Google, and I think it's primarily for developers. It's turned out, though, and this is why I really think these companies ought to consider this, to be very, very popular because people like vanilla. So there are, you know, there are three different top-of-the-line Android phones, and the Nexus 4 is one of them. And I think that's telling, but you're stuck with it the way it is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This show brought to you today by my friends at Ring Central. I love that cloud-based phone system we're using from Ring Central. It is pretty amazing. When you start a business, you know, you probably could think of all the things. You need to have a payroll service. You know, as you get employees, you got to buy desks. For some reason, I didn't ever think of a phone system. In fact, in the old place, we didn't have a phone system. I just said, well, use your cell phone. You got a phone, use it. But as you get bigger, I guess, you know, you start having to think, I guess I have to get a phone system. And this was a little bit daunting, to be honest. The only phone systems I'd experienced were, you know, big PBXs in the basement that you get through the phone company. Expensive, complicated. You got to have a guy come in and program it. So I was kind of bemoaning my fate to Russell, our IT guy. He said, no, you don't have to do that. He said, I have installed RingCentral with a number of clients. They really like it. You should take a look. So I did, and we bought it. No startup cost. Got to like that. Depending on the plan, you get around $20 per month per user. That includes long distance. It includes faxing. It's kind of all in one. It includes some other nice features as well. There's business SMS, which means you can text message from your smartphone via the business number. In fact, you make calls via the business number as well. So my employees can use their smartphones when they're at home, but they're making the call on the business line. We pay the cost, all of that. They have a new feature. If you use conferencing, their new RingCentral conferencing, you get a conference bridge number with your RingCentral account ready for unlimited conference calls for up to 1,000 participants. And all the features, you know, you can mute participants, get caller count, record them. Very easy to use. You're using your desk phone or your iPhone or Android app for RingCentral or the RingCentral soft phone. And it's free. It's included with the monthly service. I am just blown away with what you get. They keep adding features. This is a new one they just added, and I just think you're going to love it. So I want you to take advantage of it. We have a 30-day risk-free trial. And by the way, if you decide to buy, when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to a total of 20 phones. So that makes it even more desirable. RingCentral, we have a number just for our listeners, 800-543-9980. 800-543-9980. Or you can go to ringcentral.com. That's where I am. And use the offer code TWIT, and you get 30 days free and that special deal. Oh, I have to fill this. I won't fill this out right now, but you could do that for you, for yourself, if you go to ringcentral.com or call them. I think the boss, you know, the boss is probably one of those people who just likes to call. Bosses tend to like to do that. Look at all the people who use RingCentral. We love RingCentral. 800-543-9980. Tell them you heard about it on TWIT. Amazing stuff. Why aren't we on this list of users? We should be, because we love our RingCentral system. RingCentral.com. Use the offer code Twitter. Call 800-543-9980. Leo Laforte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. We're going to get Scott Wilkins in a second, but we were talking to Scott in Pasadena. So Scott, are you looking for a better carrier? What is you're really stuck with the phone that you have with T-Mobile?
Yeah, I feel like I've got one of the best Android experiences.
One of the worst carriers. You know, T-Mobile. I use T-Mobile too, and they're all right in some areas. The issue is where you
they are.
Yeah,
yeah. They're either all right 100% or they're all wrong depending on where you're at, and there's no in between.
No in between. Sprint's the same way, by the way.
My question would be, you know, I thought I didn't like an Android experience, but I found that it wasn't the Android experience. It was the fact that you take an Android phone and then you add all this goop onto it,
and all
of a sudden it doesn't work like it's supposed to.
Do you remember Windows?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. 15 million lines of other-blooded code held together with multiple generations of bug fixes.
And Microsoft tried very hard to get people to do something they called signature PCs, which were pure Windows PCs without all of the third-party junk that HP and everybody else put on. And they couldn't convince any very many PC manufacturers to do signature PCs. It's just a handful of them. Because they make these companies, Dell and HP and Compaq and everybody, made money putting the McAfee and everything else on there. People pay them for that. Now, I don't know, and this is the conversation we had at the beginning of the show. I don't know why these smartphone companies seem so hell-bent on junking up their phones. I think it's to make a differentiator. Because otherwise, really, if you look at a Motorola or an HTC or a Samsung, and you just had made plain vanilla Google, they'd all look exactly the same. Even down to the hardware specs. Quad-core, 1.7 gigahertz, same screens. So they have to do something to differentiate. Unfortunately, you know, they don't have the skill and style of a company like Apple or even of Google. And so they make stuff that's just not so great. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's our home theater guru. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
How'd it go at the Renaissance Fair last yesterday?
Huzzah!
Scott and his sack butt.
I ate a turkey leg and I drank a flagon of ale.
That's what you do, don't you? You get those turkeys. I don't know. Where are these turkeys that make legs that are like 8 pounds? What?
I don't know. I know. They're huge.
They're like dinosaur bones.
Yeah, they are. It's true.
And I don't know why they assume that in the Renaissance, people ate larger turkey legs than they do today. I don't understand that either.
Can't tell you.
Is there a historical precedent for that? I know what it is.
Bigger in the Renaissance.
I know what it is. It's that one movie with Henry VIII and his turkey leg, and that ever since they've said, well, that's if you're a king, you got to eat a big turkey leg.
Right. That's right.
So let's talk home theater, since that's why you're with us today.
Indeed.
What do you got for us?
Well, I got a question from Bob Prickett, who says. Getting old, hard to hear dialogue in movies. Yeah. Bought a good Vizio soundbar with bass and treble controls from -10 to +10. What are the best settings to reduce background music? Well, really what he wants to do is increase the dialogue. And what do minus values below zero mean anyway? Well, this is a very good question. My mom had the same problem. She was having trouble understanding the dialogue. And what I did for her was I lowered the bass a little bit, because most speech is in the upper frequency spectrum. The meaning of speech is carried in the consonants, and the consonances are in the 2 to 4 kilohertz range typically, which is why the ear is most sensitive to that frequency range, because it's most important evolutionarily to hear the meaning of speech, of dialogue. So The thing to do with a simple EQ like this, with a bass and a treble control, is to turn up the treble a little bit and or turn down the bass a little bit. And I did that for my mom on her TV and made a world of difference. Now, as to what do these negative numbers mean, they simply mean that you're cutting or reducing the frequency below its what we call nominal level, the normal level that would happen if you didn't have an EQ there. They're reducing it by a certain amount. The number zero, the setting of zero, means presumably, theoretically, what's coming out is the same as what came in. But if you reduce it, if you go into the negative numbers, then you're reducing the level of the frequencies that controls. If you put it into the plus category, you're boosting. And when we talk about EQ or equalization, which is changing the level of different frequency ranges, I always say it's better to cut than to boost. Because if you boost, particularly the high frequencies, you're not only going to boost the stuff you want, you're also going to boost the noise. Most audio signals have some noise in them. And if you boost up the high frequencies in particular, you're going to boost up that noise as well. And it's going to sound shh. You're going to hear that much more. So I generally recommend try cutting the bass first. See if that works. If not, try boosting up the treble a little bit. And you should be able to hear the dialogue quite a bit better.
You know, I should do that, because that's exactly what my mom does. She turns up the TV really, really loud.
Right.
And that means there's a lot of excess noise that doesn't help her understand the dialogue.
Right.
As you say, the bass, the rumble.
And right.
So the whole house is going. And she's not even hearing that, probably. She doesn't care, because that's getting in the way in some ways of the dialogue, which is what she
exactly.
really
Exactly. Yeah. Now, I was kind of surprised that this fellow had a Vizio soundbar with EQ, with even this most rudimentary EQ, bass and treble, which you see sometimes on car stereos a lot, actually, and on AV receivers sometimes, a very basic one. But soundbars, I looked up Vizio soundbars and I couldn't find one that had these bass and treble controls. It's just a volume control as far as I could tell.
Might be his TV or something.
Might be his TV, might be an older model.
On a 5.1 surround sound, would it make sense to turn up the center channel? Isn't the dialogue
yes.
in the center channel?
So yes.
sometimes on an AV receiver, the 5.1 receiver, you could say the center channel's louder than the rest of the speakers.
Right, correct. Because 90% plus of the dialogue of the speaking that you're hearing in the movie is coming out of the center channel, which is why the center channel, many people consider it to be the most important speaker in the entire 5.1
really?
Speaker array. So yes, you and that would be one way to do it, would be to turn up the volume of the center channel, which you have to kind of dig around the AV receiver's menus a bit to to find that control. But you can certainly do it, and that is one certainly one good way to emphasize the dialogue.
Scott is the editorial director of the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. Lots of great stuff there, including some giveaways. You can also go to his column at the Secrets of Home Theater and Hi-Fi, which is hometheaterhi-fi.com. But the most important thing Scott does all week long is host Home Theater Geeks, our Twit podcast for Home Theater Geeks. I'm just saying that.
Well, it's true.
we don't pay you enough to make it the most important thing you do. But anyway.
But it's really important, and I love doing it so much.
Who's on this Monday?
Oh, this Monday. Tomorrow we've got Joe Kane, who is probably
legendary.
Legendary. He's the guy who developed Digital Video Essentials, the test setup disc that so many people use. You have a copy of it, I'm sure.
I do.
And he's going to be on talking about his opinions about 4K, or what we also call Ultra HD. Mm. He's got yet a different name he wants to call it. He wants to call it 2160p in order to make it consistent with what we now call 1080p.
That'll catch on. Tune in. Monday afternoons. Is it 2 p.m. Pacific? 1 p.m.
Yep.
2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, twit.tv. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hour number two of the Tech Guy show for this Cinco de Mayo. John, my studio engineer, said, why aren't you wearing the hat? Oh, all right. I'll wear the hat. I'll tell you why I'm not wearing the hat. I can't wear the Chevy's sombrero and my headphones at the same time. It is an attractive hat, though, isn't it? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number to call. If you call us, you'll talk to H-Bomb, Heather H., who's... I didn't mean to make you jump. I'm sorry. You're busy taking calls, Heather.
I didn't
want to interrupt you or anything.
Please hold.
Who should I talk to next, Heather?
You want to talk to April in San Antonio? Because it's a little bit of a carryover from yesterday.
Sure. Yeah. That would be which line?
Oh, six.
I see it. Thank you, Heather. Hi, April. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. April in San Antonio.
Hi, Leo. I just wanted to know.
You don't like my singing? No, I'm just teasing. Go ahead, April. What can I do for you? Heather probably says, no matter what Leo does, just keep on asking the question, right? Is that what you tell her, Heather?
Come on.
Don't say, how are you? Don't say, what's happening? Don't laugh. Just ask the question. Heather's tough
okay,
that way.
So
no, I'm just teasing you, April. What can I do for you?
Windows 7. I just need to know, which one should I use for boot camp on my Mac, Windows 7 or Windows 8?
I would use, if you have a copy of Windows 7, I would use Windows 7. You can use Windows 8. It works just fine. But the drivers are more mature with Windows 7, which means you'll have fewer problems. And Windows 8 really wants a touch screen, in my opinion. Of course, you don't have one on your Mac. So all round, I mean, if you have a copy of Windows 8 and you don't have a copy of Windows 7, that's not a problem. Because they do have Windows 8 drivers now. They didn't for a long time in boot camp. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I thought so. Mark in Boston agrees. But I think the 7 drivers are more mature, more reliable. And since you don't have touch, what do you need Windows 8 for? That's what I use. I have on my Mac Pro, I have boot camp and I have Windows 7 running because I want to play games like BioShock Infinite and Skyrim, which haven't been released on the Macintosh. And so, you know, it's nice because you can have a Mac, use a Mac for your day-to-day work. And when you want to do something that requires Windows, you can just boot into Windows. And there you are. Thanks for the call, April. Appreciate it. Gordon in Tarzana. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gordon.
How are you doing, Leo?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. I have a quick question for you regarding BlackBerry.
Yes, sir.
I'm currently using a BlackBerry 9630. That's one of the last ones that have a trackball as opposed to the pad or now the touch.
I had one that was the Curve. I loved it.
No, actually, I believe
pre-curve.
It's a Tor.
Okay. Verizon. Storm. Ah, all right.
Tor.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
My.
I love that little trackball, by the way. That thing was great. The Pearl, they called it. Yeah.
Definitely is one of the best phones they ever made.
Yep.
The issue is that I'm running a T-Mobile SIM card through a dual band or whatever they call it, a Verizon BlackBerry that can run CDMA and whatever the other one is.
It's their world phone, yeah. GSM and CDMA, yeah.
Yes. My main concern is I'm trying to upgrade now to a different phone. And I was wondering what your opinion is. I have two main concerns. Number one is I'm not that fond of touchscreen yet. I mean, I've played with Androids. I've played with Apple. I've been around the block. I was a cell phone dealer for 20 years and then got out of that business a few years back.
Let me ask my Verizon representative. Are you guys going to get the Q10, the keyboard? May or June. So the current BlackBerry out there is the Z10, or if you're Canadian, the Z10, and that's pure touchscreen, right? But they are, and I think this is the one to get. It's using the new BlackBerry operating system, and it's got the BlackBerry keyboard. It's the most like your Pearl out there. It's the Q10, and if you want to stay on Verizon, I think April or May. Will it be a world phone, do you think, or we don't know, probably. Yeah. Probably, yeah, because BlackBerry usually makes them that way with both the
same. I'm using T-Mobile.
Oh, you said T-Mobile. I thought you said Verizon. I'm sorry.
I'm using T-Mobile as my provider in a Verizon phone. I got it for $50 online.
I understand. I did hear the word Verizon. All right, so you want to know if T-Mobile, I'm pretty sure, is going to get the Q10 as well, yeah?
Right, but my main concern is one thing is the trackpad or trackball. I have to be able to have something that I can control the screen without having a touchscreen.
I do believe they've abandoned the little Pearl in the Q10. Let me look. Because that's... I'll go to crackberry.com.
And then the other thing is the Verizon is the BlackBerry trademark keyboard that I love.
Yeah, they do have that beautiful BlackBerry keyboard, and everybody's raving about the keyboard in the Q10, but I'm sad to say they don't have the little trackball anymore.
Mm-hmm. So do you know of any other phones that are...
It has a little Pearl? Quality? No. For a while, I had a phone that did have that right about the same time. Obviously, there were others who wanted to do this. But they, as far as I know, they've abandoned the...
trackball or trackpad.
The trackball, yeah. I'm with you on that. It was one of the things, even in the earliest days when BlackBerry was just a kind of a super pager, they had a little roller...
On the side, yeah.
Yeah, and that was so useful for going through menu items and stuff. I do not know why they abandoned that, but they did. Maybe because their operating system doesn't support it. I don't know, but they know. You will love the keyboard. You'll love the keyboard because they've really maintained the traditional BlackBerry keyboard. Everybody, the domed keys and the ease of use, and everybody I know who has used the Q10 really likes it. So I guess you're going to have to, I don't know of anybody who's doing a trackpad. Somebody in the chat room, Lidless Eye, says the problem with those trackballs, they were a maintenance nightmare. It's true. I did have problems with them myself.
I'm willing to go something with a trackpad, like the more modern, like the 9900s or the 9930s.
They're not even making those anymore.
I know. That's am I allowed to say pissing me off on the radio?
Well, if you aren't, we'll dump you out. I don't know. I have no idea what the rules are on the radio anymore. They give us a test. They actually give us a test every year, so we know what can be said and not said, and it changes every year. So I can't keep.
I just had to retake my radio course.
yeah, exactly. You know, you might look at a touch screen because really, that's what the touch replaced was. This whole idea of in effect a mouse, right? Of this trackball, the ability to touch it and go right to where you want. People really. Really prefer it.
So what would you recommend? Something like an Android or an iPhone?
Well, that's a good question. I'll tell you why I would like you to try an Android is because the iPhone has one and only one keyboard. And clearly controls are important to you. You're going to be moving to your first touchscreen keyboard. It's going to be a nightmare. And I think the ability to try different keyboards, which Android gives you, will be...
I have three iPads that I use constantly.
Oh, well, you didn't tell me that. So you're used to iOS.
I am very familiar. I have an iPad 1 that I use.
Get an iPhone. T-Mobile's offering iPhones now.
Really?
iPhone. Yeah, yeah.
When did that happen?
Just recently. I know. The world is changing. Every carrier in the U.S. now has an iPhone. T-Mobile just got them.
Nice.
I'm
going to look into that.
Nice.
No, I was going to say, because I have an iPad in my room. I have the pocket-sized iPad that I travel with.
Oh, well, you know, you're already in the iOS world. You've already bought apps. I think you're probably going to have to bite the bullet and move to touchscreen, because even on this Q10, BlackBerry's using their BlackBerry 10 OS, which is very touch-centric. And if you look at the reviews on the Q10, you'll see instead of using a trackball, they're just touching the screen. And, you know, once you get used to it, you know, you get away from the whole idea of menus and everything. It kind of, you get used to it. The biggest trouble you're going to have is with a non-physical keyboard. So you might try a touchpad for a while and see if you like it. Try the iPhone. There are physical keyboard phones still out there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my friends at ShareFile Citrix. It was such a great product, ShareFile. This actually ties into what we were talking about because, you know, for a long time I've said don't open attachments, right? A lot of the ways that viruses were spread would be through email attachments. So virus would get on your system, and then the first thing it would do is go to all of the names in your address book and send them an email saying, hey, check this out. I got great pictures of Anna Kournikova. You'd click them. And boom, you're infected. So I, for years, have said, don't open attachments. But then people come back to me and say, okay, fine, but I'm a business. I need to share documents. I need to send invoices. I need to attach patient records. Whatever it is I do, how do I do that? Well, finally, I've got a really good solution for you. It's called ShareFile. It's business file sharing that's safe, that's secure, that keeps you in control of the documents. That's really important. It may even, depending on your business, be a governmental requirement. When you send a file via ShareFile, you're sending a secure link, not an attachment. People don't have to have a ShareFile account or anything. They just click the link and they can download the file. You'll be notified when they do so. You can have password protection. You can say how many times they can download it. You know, you could say you can download this, but only once. You could say for how long the download's good. It's only good for a week or a day or a year. You have total control. You'll get notifications when the file's open, which is nice. Plus, you could set up shared folders for easy collaboration with clients and coworkers. I use ShareFile every single week to send off audio files to the various radio stations. It's worked flawlessly, and I can highly recommend it. I want you to try it today. Go to ShareFile.com. At the very top of the page, don't click the – it's a little confusing. There's a green button that says start your free trial. Please don't use that one. Use the radio listeners button, the microphone at the top, little tiny one, because that's your chance to type in the most important word for me, tech guy, all one word. Choose your industry, too, because they customize it for various industries, everything from real estate to media to legal to medical, event planning, food service, everything. So I'm in video. Let's choose video. And then try that for 30 days free. ShareFile.com. Please use the offer code TechGuy. Click that link at the top of the page. I think you're going to like it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Oh, my, my, my. 8888. Ask Leo. Let's go to Randy. He's in Bernal Heights, up here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Listening on, it's KKSF now, right? 9:10 a.m. Hey, Randy, how are you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Is this me, Randy?
Oh, you're in Ventura. I misread it. I was all excited. Hi, Randy. Yes, you, Randy.
I misread it, too. I kind of like
you moved to Bernal Heights all of a sudden. No, you're in Ventura. I'm sorry. I misread that.
Who knew?
What can I do for you?
So I just upgraded my home desktop after 12 years. And I was very happy with my setup, and I was using a whitelist anti-spam software called Curb. And apparently it's no longer supported by, I guess CA bought it. And so there's no version of it for Windows 7. So I'm looking for a good whitelist anti-spam program that's compatible with Microsoft Outlook.
Whitelisting as opposed to blacklisting means you say, I only want to get mail from these people.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's very effective, but the problem is, what if somebody wants to mail you and you don't know them, but you want their mail? Does that ever happen to you?
Well, sure. The program that I was using before, this Curb, K-U-R-B, everything that wasn't on my whitelist went into a quarantine folder, and then I could review just the headers in the quarantine folder and pick the ones that I wanted to receive. So, you know, I'd say 60% of the emails that I receive now are probably things that I don't care to look at. So I can spend about 10 seconds a day, go through everything that's in quarantine and pick out the one or two items that I actually want to receive.
That's a very effective way to do it, because, of course, you never get spam. The only risk is you're going to miss something that you want to get.
I'm willing to take that risk.
You're living danger, living on the edge, my friend. I don't know, actually. There are such good, effective anti-spam fighters now that I think whitelisting has become less of a popular choice. I'm really, I don't know off the top of my head. You know, people who use, it's funny, it's we used to get all the time questions about spam fighting. It was the number one topic. And about 4 years ago, it just stopped. And I trace that to the widespread use of Gmail. Gmail uses something called collaborative spam fighting that turns out to be very, very effective. If you use Google's mail system and you get spam, you say, hey, this was spam. And Google's tracking all the people. It's basically using humans to fight spam. And as soon as three or four people say this is spam, they say, oh, it is spam, and they stop letting it go through. And my experience with Gmail is it's very, very effective. Now, let me think about whitelisting. If there's somebody we could find that does this. I do something similar, by the way. What I do is I use a filter on my main mail provider. I won't say their name because I don't want anybody to know about it. But I use a mail provider, and I use a special script on there that says, if the person is in my address book, send it to another separate account. And that account is like that mail is, of course, whitelisted. It's only people in my address book. So I know when mail goes there, it's people that I really want to hear from.
Yeah, I'd rather, you know, if I could do the whitelisting at the server level, obviously that would be better. Because I've got two or three computers that are all receiving the same email account.
Are you able to change the MX record on your domain? I know that's pretty techie. Do you know what that means?
That's more techie than I am.
Okay. Because there is a company called MailRoute, a good friend of mine runs, that if you it's server-side routing. So you need to go to your DNS provider for your email. And you need to say, I want you to go through MailRoute and then come to me. And MailRoute does have very sophisticated filtering, including whitelisting, graylisting, which is kind of interesting. Graylisting is maybe the alternative to whitelisting. The first time you get email from somebody that you've never received email before, it puts it in kind of this temporary jail. It says to the sending server, come back in an hour. It turns out spammers are in such a hurry, they don't come back. The way spam mailers typically work is they try once and only once. So in a way that eliminates a lot of mail by graylisting, saying, I'm only going to allow people through that I've seen before. Have you tried it without any spam filtering? Are you running your own mail server, your internet service provider? Who's running your mail server?
I'm using my ISP.
Okay. You might look at using Gmail. I have to tell you, they're very, very effective. You may not need to do this whitelisting anymore. I don't know off the top of my head who does whitelisting specifically anymore. Chat room, if you know somebody, let me know. Gmail does allow you to specifically whitelist some addresses, but that doesn't mean the rest of it isn't going to come in.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've been happy with that route in the past.
No, it's going to be the most effective way. But as I said, the downside is you're going to miss some email you might want.
Yeah. All right.
Or you have to go through that bin. Ideally, we don't want to do anything, right? I just don't want to get spam.
Ideally, I don't.
Yeah. So I think you may find there are some good solutions that would eliminate your need to check this bin periodically. Somebody's telling me Spam Assassin does this. It does indeed. And there is a Spam Assassin for Outlook. So Spam Assassin, which is the power tool used by many internet service providers, is certainly something to look into. It is an open source and very effective. My main provider uses Spam Assassin.
And that's available on an individual level as well?
It is. They have if you look at the Spam Assassin wiki, they have a manual whitelisting capability. And you can do all sorts of things with Spam Assassin. What it does is all your mail goes through it and it scores it. And you can say, hey, if the score is too high, this is spam score, I don't want to see it. But what you can also say is, unless the score is zero, I don't want to see it, or it's whitelisted. The other thing is, since you're using Outlook, you could, of course, write a rule that says, for instance, if this person's in my address book, I want you to put it in the VIP folder. And then you only check the VIP folder. And if you want to whitelist somebody, you just add them to your address book.
Okay.
So you could do that locally, not server-side, but locally.
All right. There's some options. I'm going to check out that mail route. That sounds like it might be.
Mailroute.net. It's very, very good.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We don't, you know, spam, it's funny, is not any less than it was. In fact, all evidence is that there's more spam traffic than ever before. But do you notice that you don't get as much spam as you used to? That's because we've gotten pretty good at fighting spam. And I think, Gmail gets a lot of credit for that. A lot of people are using Gmail now. And that collaborative filtering really works. So I'm sure Gmail has some basic rules. You know, if they say Viagra four times, that's spam. But they mostly do it collaboratively. So they let humans flag, because the problem is computers aren't very good at detecting spam. A lot of times something that, you know, maybe your friend's telling you about Viagra. It's not spam. Maybe your girlfriend has a message for you. I don't know. 8888-ASK-LEO. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Randy's in Missoula, Montana, our next caller on the show. Hi, Randy. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I have a question. I have an old Windows phone, an HTC Touch Pro 2, that I run a simple invoicing program with that allows me to print through Bluetooth to a cordless Canon printer. None of the new technology phones will allow me to do that. And so it seems like we're going backwards in technology.
Yeah.
With the Windows phone or with the iPhone, I run an iPhone 5 for my personal phone, and you can print to a AirPrint printer, but nobody makes a portable AirPrint printer.
Right.
And the new Windows phone, I've called a couple of invoice program companies, and they say that there's no way to make a PDF on the new Windows phone.
Oh, geez, Louise.
So I could email them the file. They could turn it into a PDF back to me. But I want something that I can print immediately for the customer when I'm on the site doing the work. I want to type out an invoice on the phone and send it to the printer and print it out and give them a copy right there. Do you have any insight on that?
So you carry this Canon printer around with you?
I do. Yeah, it's a very small printer. It's like an IP90, I think it is, with a battery on it.
And you're saying that, so it's a Bluetooth printer, and you're saying that the new phones don't have that capability of printing to the Bluetooth?
Well, what I'm being told by the companies, so the software that I use is only supported up to Windows 6.5 mobile.
Oh, I see. So
the newer invoicing programs, every one of them that I check into, they all allow you to
email? I get it. So maybe what you want is a printer that you can email to instead of Bluetooth to.
That might be an option if somebody makes a cordless one of those. I want it to be as simple as possible.
Yeah.
I've been searching the internet quite a bit, and everybody's got all these hacks that can work, and you can take a non-portable printer and get a power supply for it and do all this.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
One way
that Android is solving this is with Google Print, which is kind of an interesting technology. It lets you print to, it's like AirPrint, but it lets you print over the internet to a Google Print-enabled printer. So, for instance, my Epson workforce printer at home is Google Print compatible. So with any Android device, actually, with any device at all, because I can do it on my computer, too, I could print to that printer. That's not going to help you because the printer would be back at the office.
Right.
And I don't know. So you say you want to use a Windows phone, or do you care about that?
I don't really care about that. There's two different programs that I've looked into, and one of them is, I think it's Invoice to Go, which is you can run on the Apple OS. But it doesn't allow you to print unless you do it on a network printer. There's no mobile printer that will do it.
Right.
And the program that I looked into is Windows-based, which would be a print program called On-Site Invoice, which the invoicing part of it is great, except they don't allow printing. So from the phone, you can send the copy the invoice into them. They can convert it to a PDF. That just seems...
No, it's great. Too complicated.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that. Is there an Android version of the software? Have you looked it on Android phone?
No, I have not.
Because most Android phones, you can print directly to a USB printer. So that printer that you have has a USB port on it.
It does, yes.
Yeah, and you can get a USB to go
adapter
and print directly to it from an Android phone. I don't know if you can do that on a Windows phone. I know you can't do it on an Apple phone.
Well, where I'm at right now, if I don't find a newer program that's going to work, is I'm just going to buy a new old stock phone with Windows 6.5 on it and keep running the same thing I'm running. But then basically I'm just packing a phone that's a PDA.
Right. You're just using it for that.
Option, if I'm going to do that, is maybe I should look at a tablet, like a Windows or Android.
Well, I think a lot of people are using things like Square, which instead of printing invoices, even Apple does this. When you go and buy something at the Apple store, they say, well, we're going to email you the receipt. And they don't want to print you a receipt.
Your customer base, but my customer base is...
You know, I understand. In fact, this seems like it's a huge category.
Yeah, if you start searching around the internet, there's a ton of people looking to do the same thing I'm doing, but none of the companies are... I mean, none of the hardware manufacturers are making it easy.
Right. So if you're a contractor, you're doing HVAC, I can think of lots of reasons where you're out in the field and you want to give somebody a receipt and you want to print it out.
Absolutely. And there are dedicated systems that some of the bigger companies have where they print out the small invoices on the smaller printers. I like to print on the full page sheet, but then I don't want to spend the money that these companies are paying for these dedicated systems. I'd like to do it with just my phone and a printer.
Invoice2Go is available on Android, I'm told, by our chat room. So if that software does what you want it to do, you could get a late model, newer, you know, a Galaxy S3 or S4 or something. Actually, Galaxy Note would be a good choice. And use the USB2Go cable and print right to the printer. That actually would be the most reliable anyway. Be more reliable than Bluetooth.
Sure. Well, I'll do that. The first one I did was actually IR printing with my first...
Yeah, I remember those days. Yeah.
And then I got my newer HTC, then it had the Bluetooth, which is actually much faster printing.
Sure.
And problem plugging a cord in. I just need to be able to not...
Yeah, you walk back to your vehicle. You say, great, I got it. Here, I'll print out an invoice for you. You walk back to your vehicle, you push a button. This would be the fastest way to print, in fact.
Right. Well, sounds good. I will check into that. Invoice2Go, I'll look that program a little bit more and check into an Android phone.
Yeah. And boy, you nailed this. This is something, there's a major market for this, I would think. And why it's not better supported is beyond me.
It seemed a natural upgrade for my old Windows phone that Windows would still allow me to do that, because hooking up Windows 6.5 to a printer was
right.
Just key.
Yeah, this is kind of an issue on the new Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8, is they started from scratch. So it's taking a while to get back up to speed, back to where they were with Windows Phone 6.5 in terms of the number of apps.
And from talking to the software manufacturers, it sounds like there's some proprietary stuff that Windows kind of locked
down. Yeah, and they may not have the resources to do it. You know who would really be the companies to do this would be the people who are making these portable printers. Because you got to buy these printers, right? So that's the market.
And I'm happy with the iPhone 5. If somebody would make a portable AirPrint printer, I think then it's just
Well, then that's a good question. But now the problem with that is you'd have to get it on Wi-Fi. So you'd have to do something with that. I guess you could have a little MiFi device, or somehow you'd have to be on the same Wi-Fi network to make that work.
Well, I think for now I'll look into that Invoice2Go.
Yeah. Take a look at that. Yeah. And then, since you're on Android, at that point, you can also use Cloud Print, so you could do two invoices. You could print one out at the office and one in your car, and you'd be set.
All right.
Thanks for the call. I hope somebody's listening. The portable printer manufacturers or some Windows phone developers. This is a market, I would guess, a very large market. It's not the first time we've had the question. Lots of people, completely understandably, want to go out in the field and use a tablet or a smartphone, do their invoicing, it's not just invoicing, by the way. It would be estimates as well, right? do an estimate and hand the customer a printed estimate. A lot of customers still want that printed estimate. It's no good if you say, hey, yeah, I'm going to do an estimate. I'll email it to you. No, I want a physical printout, please. If anybody knows, the chat room's there. We also have a great website, techguylabs.com, and you can always add your answer to our comments. In fact, that's the whole reason we set this up. Techguylabs.com. If you go there, you'll see as the show goes, James DeRuvo is kind of the show secretary, scribbling down what I say, you know, kind of in shorthand, putting that on the website, at least as a starting point. Then Josh Windus in our office goes back. He takes the video. We edit up a video of the show, which we put on the YouTube and on the internet and on our website. He goes through it and writes a more detailed description of the answer, but then also attaches it to the question on the website. So you can go to the website on any of our shows and say, hey, Leo, got this question. I remember it was kind of in the middle of the second hour about you go, you find it. You can listen to the question, listen to my answer, watch the question, watch my answer. But then the comment section, if you would do me a favor, do our callers a favor, answer. If you've got an answer, a better way to do it, put that in the comments. Really appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. TechGuyLabs.com. Our Tech Guy show brought to you by Gazelle. They picked the right time to advertise because, of course, Gazelle is the place you take your old smartphone or your old tablet when it's time to get the new smartphone, a new tablet. And in many cases, you know, people often ask me and others like me, how can you afford to always have the new gadget? Well, my secret weapon is Gazelle. They'll take the old stuff and they'll give you cash for it. That's pretty good. Let's say you're thinking about that HTC One. You've got an old Galaxy Note 2. I wonder who's that like? Oh, yeah, me. Let's see. I had an unlocked Galaxy Note 2. There it is, the GTN 7100. You enter in how, you know, what kind of quality it is. Mine's in good shape. By the way, I have another one that's not working. I'll show you. They'll even buy broken stuff and give you cash for it. Free of water damage. $220. Woohoo! So now here's the great part. I throw that in the box. They provide you with a box postage paid. On anything worth more than a buck, they'll pay the postage. But as long as we're throwing stuff in the box, let's throw some. I wonder if they'll buy my Galaxy Note 2 that doesn't function anymore. That's also factory unlocked. Galaxy Note 2, it's broken. They probably won't buy that. Free of water damage, yeah, it just stopped working. They're not going to buy that, are they? Yeah. Oh, rats. How about my iPhone 4S? Got a few of those. AT&T getting an offer for that. $215. Throw that in the box. Now, once you've filled up that box, and by the way, you have 30 days to do this. All these quotes are good for 30 days. You ship it off to Gazelle. They pay the postage. They'll wipe the data off of it. They'll check and make sure it's in the condition you said it was. And by the way, they can upgrade your price too. If they say, hey, you know, this is in better condition than you said, they'll send you more money. I've heard it happen all the time. And when I say money, I mean a check, of course, but also instantly PayPal credit. Or, and this is my recommendation, if you use Amazon, get the Amazon gift card because they add 5% to the value of that. Kind of rebate the Amazon affiliate fee. You get paid fast. They take care of you. Gazelle, no wonder over 500,000 customers have been paid more than $100 million selling their stuff on Gazelle. Right now, get $10 extra for your iPhone 4S. They know people are gearing up for the next generation. Gearing up? You want the Galaxy S4, the new iPhone, the HTC One? This is your chance. Get cash for your old gadgets at gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, hour number two of the Tech Guy program. Taking your calls, talking high tech, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, or suggestion, say hello to Heather, and she'll put you on the air here, starting with our next call, Garrett in Rochester. Hi, Garrett. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo to you.
Thank you. I'm calling because I run a little tiny website, and on there, I'm an IT guy. On my website, when I encounter a problem and I try to, you know, Google it and try and find a solution, and there's nothing I can figure out, I have to end up troubleshooting this myself, figure the whole problem out. I like to document my solutions in hopes that maybe someday I'll help someone else out.
What a great idea.
I thought that was nice. You know, just a good idea.
That's what makes the web what it is that everybody putting in a little bit of content. And thanks to Google, we can search anywhere within that content. And it's a massive reference library.
Exactly. I only did a few hundred hits a day, but I know, you know, I'm helping someone.
Well, give us a let's give you a plug. What's the name of the site?
It is, I'm one of your chat room members. The website is newangel.net, N-U-A-N-G-E-L.net.
N-U-A-N-G-E-L.net. And yeah. Oh, that's you, New Angel, in the chat room.
That's me.
Well, it's nice to meet you.
Thank you, sir. My main question, though, comes down to occasionally, very rarely, I make videos for these, and I upload them to YouTube. But my question is, how do you go about managing multiple YouTube channels? For instance, if I want to have things to upload for this website, little articles I can help with.
This is awesome, by the way. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it's shows like yours that have inspired me for years, so trust me.
Well, you're really giving back, and you know, I think this is great, and it's very nicely done, I must say.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's just a WordPress theme. So.
Yeah.
But my main question boils down to, I do upload videos to YouTube, but I kind of was hoping to have two separate YouTube accounts, one for personal, you know, if I just want to upload a video of my friend Shenanigans.
Yeah, I have a personal account, and then we have a Twitter account, and now we even have, each show has its own YouTube account. Those are all separate accounts.
And is that what it is? There's no good way to have one parent account and manage them all?
Well, this was the debate we had internally. So for those who don't know, I have, besides this show, I have a podcast network with 25 other shows, all of which, including this show, are on YouTube. And for a long time, we just were all at youtube.com/twit. So we just dumped it all up there. And you do have channels. So you can have different channels on one account, and each channel can be separate. And by doing that, you know, you can separate them out. But what we found was the negative on that is we wanted people to subscribe to individual shows, and they couldn't. You can only subscribe to an entire channel. And so we thought, well, we might want to change this so that you can subscribe to other channels. So what we did is we created, you know, youtube.com/techguy, youtube.com/thisweekintech, and all the other shows. And that way you can, if you go to YouTube, I hope it's Tech Guy. Actually, I don't even know what our YouTube site is for this show. It's probably not Tech Guy. I would guess somebody else has Tech Guy, but let's just check off the top of my head. Let's see. It's not, that's somebody else. That's another Tech Guy. Lowercase Tech Guy. How about the Tech Guy? Nope, that doesn't work either. Well, I'm sure I have a site. Yeah. Shows how in touch with this I am. I think for you, for what you're doing, it probably is sufficient to have one account and then just make channels on the account. Yeah, that's not it either. Tech Guy Labs, is that it? Maybe. Nobody knows. Only Josh knows. If you make one account, yeah, it's the Tech Guy. There it is. If you make one account and then put different channels within that account, my personal channel, my help videos, that would work. It's just the people subscribing are going to get all the videos.
Okay, so you can make actual, they're not
sub channels. Yeah, you can make sub channels within, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what we used to do. We decided to break them out, and you might want to if, it just depends. It just depends on what your goals are and so forth. Having each show have its own channel has a certain something.
Maybe you and Lamar can go into this in detail.
That's good. Yeah, we do a new show called This Week in YouTube. We should really explain this. You'll note that on the Tech Guy, if you go to youtube.com/thetechguy, there is a featured channel link that links back to other channels. So if you do have multiple accounts, you can at least promote those other accounts within it.
Oh,
you see? So that's another way to do it, and that's probably what I would do. This is what we decided to do.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Hey, good luck to you. I think that's fantastic. New Angel. We brought the site down, by the way. NUANGEL.net.
Great. Thanks so much, Leo.
Nice to talk to you, New Angel. Thank you for doing this. This is what the internet is all about. And perhaps you might get a little bit... I know I dimly remember my first blog back in the 90s. It felt a little weird. It's like, well, who am I and why should I have a website? You know, it seemed very egotistical, and maybe it is a little bit, But what the net is made up of a bunch of individual egos who have decided that what they have to say is worth putting up in public. And by doing so, you're contributing to the overall content of the net. Now, people have noted, oh, the net's full of misinformation and bad stuff. Of course it is. Of course it is. But Google has algorithms to try to surface the best stuff. And you have to learn as a user of the internet how to sift the wheat from the chaff. But I think that the beauty of this is the vast amount of information that's available. And one of the biggest categories is tech help, isn't it? Because of course, the first people on the net were all geeks. Daniel, Los Angeles, just buy a Mac. I'm sorry. Hi, Daniel.
How are you?
I'm good. You want me to tell you what to buy, huh?
Would you just tell me already? I don't want to go shopping, nothing. I just want someone of your caliber to tell me where to go.
Windows or Mac? Rephrase
that. Not where to go, but where to buy a computer.
Yeah, I'll tell you where to go, buddy. Yeah, I'll tell you where to
do that.
Yeah, you want a Windows or a Mac?
I think I want a Windows.
Okay. I would say get a Mac in general. They're more expensive, but they seem to have fewer problems. I like them a lot. I'm not crazy about Windows 8. However, if you're committed to getting a Windows machine, you're going to be getting a Windows 8 machine. Have you used Windows before?
Not the Windows 8.
Windows 8's very different. I highly recommend, if you get Windows 8, getting a touch screen.
Mm-hmm. I did look at one of those at one of the stores.
Okay. Lenovo makes some very good ones. I'll tell you, the Windows 8 I'm using right now, a laptop I love, a little pricey, but it's super thin and light, is the Acer S7, A-C-E-R.
Acer what?
S as in Sam 7.
Okay.
It's very lightweight, very beautiful. There are, in the Windows 8 category, there's a lot of variation because some of them are tablets that dock into a keyboard. Some of them are just more traditional.
Right.
I'll tell you the brands I like. Dell. Right. I like Lenovo. I like Acer. Those are all kind of $1,300 excellent Windows 8 laptops. Very nice.
I talked to a friend of mine who listens to your show as well, and he, because he knows what I use it for, and he suggested I get something with i5.
That's right.
Right here. i7 processor.
i5 is sufficient unless you have higher end needs, because that's going to add $300.
Okay. 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
And whatever that is.
Yeah.
And then 1 terabyte.
Yep. That's all accurate. All of that would be good to get. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Happy Cinco de Mayo. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to answer your tech questions. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. You'll be saying hello to a woman whose name I've been mispronouncing for the last 3 weeks. Heather Hammond?
Yeah.
So, Mrs. Hammond, I'm sorry I'm labeling
Mrs. Hammond's my mom.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mrs. Hammond. Oh. I'm sorry I ruined your name there.
Oh, right, yeah.
You're from Chicago?
Why are you letting people mispronounce your name?
I know.
Yeah, Chicago area, mostly.
Is that where your mom still is?
No, they're out here.
They moved out here?
Yeah.
To follow you, huh?
It was kind of the other way around, but yeah.
Oh.
But
yeah.
Boy, did we adapt to California and wine country and everything. Mm. Like,
Me too. When I moved, I'm from Rhode Island. When I moved out here, I was never going back.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't snow here. I'm staying.
Yeah, it snows exactly where you want it to snow, in the Sierra.
Yeah, in the mountains.
And you can go skiing.
Or you can leave. So who should I take next? I see some great calls coming up here.
Exactly. We have to get to Brad because he's helping out an earlier caller with their problem.
Love that. Brad is on, Highway 1? No. Brad, see,
Wyoming.
It's so tiny.
We got to work on that.
I can barely read it because I'm an old man. Brad in Wyoming, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Heather.
Hey,
Brad.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Hey, listen, you had a caller. He called in and wanted to with the printer and the iPhone.
Yeah, he was like a contractor or HVAC guy, and he wanted to go out in the field and print receipts right from his phone.
Well, that shouldn't be. I mean, I got an Epson printer with iPrint and an iPhone 5, and I just got an inverter in the truck. I just plugged straight into that.
So you have a big boy printer. See, he has this little portable battery-powered printer. You say, just get a big boy printer.
Yeah, ones that are cheap, they're not even $100.
I know, they're so cheap. And you have enough room in your truck, you could put it somewhere and you just leave it there. And it's got an inverter, so it's powered. And then, is it Wi-Fi? How do you print to it?
Yeah, it's Wi-Fi. It's AirPrint.
So you turn on your hotspot on your phone?
Yeah, and I don't need Wi-Fi there. It has a Wi-Fi link between the two of them automatically.
Oh.
You're not doing it in the middle of nowhere. So, I mean, it just works, you know.
Okay.
The question I have for you is, in that same setup, I've got a scanner on there. When I want to scan a document into the iPhone, how the hell do I do that?
You need AirScan, which doesn't exist.
Yeah.
They didn't invent that yet. They got to invent that. No, yeah.
Nobody charged me more for upgrades then.
Yeah, no, there's no AirScan yet. That would be a good idea. That's an interesting question. No, yeah, I can scan to my laptop from a Wi-Fi, most Wi-Fi scanners or Wi-Fi multifunction printers.
Yeah.
But I can't do it to my iPhone. What would you scan? What would you scan?
Out of the bag, you know. I mean, but instead of like for e-fax or something is what I was thinking.
Yeah, you've got an incoming fax or an outgoing fax.
Scan it and send it right back to them.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Anyway.
No air scan yet, but I appreciate the answer, Brett. Thank you.
Hey, one more thing. Danny called asking about a computer, right?
Yeah.
Which one you should get. I just figure, well, if you're looking between a Mac and a PC, why not look at the one Apple's always trying to sue? Have you had any luck with Samsung laptops?
Yeah, they're very nice, actually. They sue them over the phones, not the laptops, but they're very nice. Samsung's an excellent brand. Yeah, I have no problem with them. In fact, they make some very thin and light ones. Is that what you use a Mac, don't you?
I used to use an Amiga back when Commodore Business was around, but
wow,
they're long gone, and Mac was a natural slide, you know, I mean, just transition.
Now, a number of people are saying one way to do this scanner thing would be to get one of those portable scanners. There are a lot of them, like Doxies and Neat Receipts, one of the little portable scanners that scan to Evernote.
Yeah, I haven't got one yet, but I'm considering it myself.
Yeah, that would be another way to do it, perhaps.
Yeah, that might work. But how would you scan into, even if you have a...
Well, that's the point. Once it's in Evernote, then you it's on your phone because Evernote syncs with your phone.
Okay, that's what I needed to know.
But you need to leave a laptop in the cab.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Doxy Go comes with a Wi-Fi card. The problem is, Crimson, I think that the way to get it into the phone is via Evernote, which means you need a desktop. Here's another one. Of course, there's a number of great programs. You're on an iPhone?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a number of great programs that are designed to use your phone's camera as a scanner.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, I used to use one that was very good. The camera is good enough that you could just photograph it. Of course, that's probably the easiest way to do it.
That's probably what I'm going to have to do. I'll be surfing the App Store tonight, I guess. Well, thank you, Leo. I appreciate it.
Anytime. I thank you for the call. I'm trying to remember which one I used. It was designed specifically to kind of get stuff into the camera. JotKnot. That was it. JotKnot. They call it JotKnot Scanner Pro. It has a lot of features that make it better for scanning. The ability to kind of take a black and white scan, increase the contrast, the text is readable, and so forth. So you just use the JotKnot on your iPhone and take a picture with it. Works quite well. Android has something called Cam Scanner. I think there's a cam scanner or something like it for the iPhone as well, but I've used JotKnot, and I like it a lot. 8888 Ask Leo. See, the chat room's great, too. In fact, this is one of the reasons we love the website, techilabs.com, because the chat room will give us a ton of other alternatives. In fact, Web99 just gave me an article that says, scan directly into the iPhone. So we'll put that in the website, and that website, over time, becomes more and more useful. So thank you, Web99. James is going to take that link and put it right into our show notes at techguylabs.com. This is kind of a wild product. It's from Hammacher Schlemmer, so that makes me wonder how good it is. It's the direct-to-iPhone scanner. It has a 30-pin docking port, so you need to have the old iPhone. Was 169, now 104. I can tell you why, because of the 30-pin connector. But it's a scanner that connects right into the phone. That's bizarre. Evernote also has a camera mode used to take pictures of documents, says Smitty. That's true. Evernote's an amazing program. One of the nice things about using Evernote for that is that it's then on your desktop or your iPad or whatever other devices you use. As long as you have Evernote on that, it syncs between everything else. Frankie in Victorville. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Frankie.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I'm a long-time listener. I'm a big fan.
Right on.
And I listen to all your podcasts.
Thank you, sir.
I am moving in a few weeks to a rural area, and I currently have Fios Internet, but where I'm going, they do not offer that.
Uh-oh. I see that you're in the chat room, and they're giving you all sorts of suggestions, too. This is a very common problem, because understand, people who create, you know, who wire you up for internet like Verizon and Fios are going to do it in the areas with the highest population density. So when you move to a rural area where there's one person for every square mile, it's just not profitable. You know, it costs them so much to get that wire out to you, and it's one person using it. They can't charge you enough to make it worthwhile. So in and you know, if you're if you have phone service, but unfortunately, phone internet, DSL we call it, doesn't work well if you're more than 2 kilometers outside of the central office. That's about a mile, mile and a half, something like that. Then it doesn't work well either. Cable company may not have wired you up for cable. So now all of the normal alternatives are shot. So there's a couple of different choices in rural areas that are wireless. One is satellite. Satellite's not bad. The more modern stuff like Xceed is pretty good. But it has one significant flaw, the latency. So because you're sending a signal up to a satellite and back down, there can be a considerable amount of delay. You've seen it when CNN is making a satellite phone call. The anchor will stop talking, and 3 seconds later, the reporter starts talking. That's fine if you're just downloading email or web pages, but if you're playing a video game or Skype, the latency will kill you. Some areas have wireless internet service providers, or WISPs. I know the chat room's talking about that as well. Those would be your two choices, I'm afraid. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Hour number three of the Tech Guy Show. So we're talking with Frankie in Victorville about high-speed internet in a rural area. The two choices, as I mentioned, are satellite, or if you're lucky enough to have WISP. The best speed on satellite I've seen, it's not cheap, is a company called Xceed, E-X-E-D-E. They sell Xceed service under other names, WildBlue and so forth. You got to get a dish, so it's upfront cost is fairly high. And again, latency is going to kill you. You get decent speeds, downloads, and upload. Upload's not as good, but download's decent. But what you don't get is good gaming or Skype and that kind of thing, because the Wi-Fi, the latency will just kill you. All right. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Patrick in Pomona, California. Hi, Patrick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey.
Help.
All right. Pick up the phone so I can hear you a little bit better, because the speakerphone's not too good.
That took you off speakerphone.
Oh,
sorry.
Good. Thank you. No problem.
Got the FBI virus.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And even downloading a couple of the cures I see on the net.
Yeah.
Are proving to be quite a pain.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So this is ransomware, is what they call this. And the reason we call it the FBI version of the ransomware is you actually have a big FBI logo on it. Although if it happens to you in other countries, you'll see Interpol or other international police organizations. It's obviously not from any of those, because what they say with the FBI virus is, well, you've been busted doing something illegal, child pornography or piracy. And the only way... To get off if this is not to go to jail, not to go to court, not to get arrested, to send us coupons, money pack coupons from your local 7-Eleven. No, I don't think the FBI works this way. I don't think the Interpol works this way.
Why can't they just follow the money and arrest them?
That's why they use money. That's why they use money pack, because it's completely anonymous. And they're probably almost certainly in Eastern Europe or Russia, and they're just outside the arm of the law, unfortunately. And what's sad about this is I think it scares people when they see this. I think and this is what the hackers want. They want you to go, oh my goodness, I'm in deep trouble. Quick, let's pay this fine. They want you to act without thinking, because the quicker that you act, the less you'll think about it. By the way, somebody, Big Ginger in the chat room, is saying, yes, they did catch some of these guys in Spain.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but this doesn't stop it because this was just one group of many using it. This virus gets around. And so there, anytime you have a virus, we do one of these per episode. You're the lucky one. Anytime you get a virus, as you'll see, if you search for Money Pack virus or FBI virus, you'll see a bunch of sites that claim we can remove this stuff. There's even one called FBIvirus.net. Okay, warning number one. Who knows if this is actually removal? If I were a bad guy and I really wanted to infect people, I'd put a website up that said, hey, we'll remove any virus free. Download and run our software. What a great way to get a virus on people's computers. So let's learn a lesson. The bad guys need you to run software on your system to infect your system. So there's always a risk when you download software and you do a Google search for a virus killer and you download it. There's always the risk that you're not, in fact, fixing anything but making it worse. There are programs. You probably found Malwarebytes, malwarebytes.org. Now, this is legitimate. This is real. A lot of people recommend this. It purports to be able to remove all kinds of malware from your system. Here's the problem. Malware authors aren't stupid. They're just as smart as the Malwarebytes guys. The first thing they do now when they install on your system is they attach themselves to system files. And they do it in such a way that removing the malware will kill your system. You're worse than ever. So there really isn't a good way to fix this. Now, you do want to get your data. One of the reasons these ransomwares are so effective is because you can't access your programs. You can't get your data off unless you disable them. So follow instructions, and there are good instructions. You'll boot into safe mode. You'll remove it to the extent that you can get to your data. But that's just the first step. You now need to back up your data and start over. Erase the hard drive and reinstall Windows from a known good copy. This is the only safe and sure way to get rid of malware. The reason being, malware attaches itself in all sorts of places. These guys don't want to be removed. There is no known safe and effective way to remove it that's guaranteed. Partly because the viruses mutate all the time. They're just like human viruses. Every week, this ransomware, this FBI virus, changes in response to antivirus and other security companies trying to get rid of it. So absolutely, absolutely required that you start over. When you back up, be careful. Don't back up the virus. So if you somebody in the chat room is pointing out, yeah, you probably don't want to back up your download folder. That's probably probably what you downloaded and installed. So be very careful. Be very careful. Back up the data that you know you made, that's your data. Scan it with a good antivirus. You've heard us talk about ESET's NOD32. That's a good choice. Microsoft makes a free scanner available. In fact, it's built into Windows 8 now. Microsoft Security Essentials at Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. They also install on every version, up-to-date version of Windows every month, an updated malware scanner, MRT, the malicious software removal tool. That's very handy. But none of this will work 100%. Once you see that big FBI warning, you should take a deep breath because you've got some work ahead of you. You've got to erase the drive and reinstall Windows. It's the only sure thing. You can't do the restore. Restore points get infected. These guys are smart. They don't want you to remove them, but they want you to think you've removed them. So they go to all sorts of great lengths to make sure that you have not removed them. You just think you have. And Illuminati saying, don't reformat, wipe it. Yeah, I mean, reformatting is probably enough. But if you really want to be safe, you could use something like DBAN, Darren's Boot and Nuke, which is a free program from DBAN, DBAN.org, I think. But you can Google DBAN, you'll find it. That wipes the drive, overwrites it. It's really, best not to get this in the first place. And that's why it's so important to make sure Windows is kept up to date, you run a good antivirus software, and most importantly, you behave in a way that protects yourself. You don't take software from strangers. You're very careful when you see a link that says, oh my goodness, you've got to download this, or holy cow, you should have seen what you did last night. You've got to be very paranoid. And remember that a hacker's goal is to get you either to go to an infected website. I get spam, a lot of spam, in the last couple of days. Remember, we were talking about spam and how we don't get it anymore. All of a sudden, I'm getting these spam, and they're come-ons from young ladies saying, hey, I want to be your friend. Click this link. Here's a little test. Do you click that link? No! No! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Travis in Los Angeles. It is such a tiny printing, Heather. It's so tiny, and I'm so old. Travis in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Travis.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Oh, great. I have this old Dell, and it's a 32-bit. Anyway, make a long story short, I know the computer has some viruses on it right now.
I'm sorry.
But what, and I also know it's an old XP system, and I also know that supposedly Microsoft is going to stop supporting it next year.
Yeah, next year, next May.
Right. Okay, so what I really want to do with it is I really want to install like a Linux type of operating
system.
That's
a very good idea.
But the problem I've got, and this would be even before the viruses or anything like that, is neither one. It's got two optical drives in it, a DVD and a CD drive.
Yeah.
And neither one of them will read or write to a disk. But when I boot the computer up, the power lights come on, right?
Yeah.
But now, so I opened up the case, and there's a lot of dust in it.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of dust.
You're the first person in there since the computer was sold, I think.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I bought it off a guy used.
Okay.
But I was just wondering, you know, those air dusters, would it really... Would it help to blow the thing out?
It might. It's probable that those optical drives are shot. There's a lot of
possibility. They are IDE drives.
Yeah. So, well, here's what I would do. It wouldn't hurt to do this. The problem with compressed air is it just blows the dust around. It certainly can clean it off. There's also an issue of condensation. You can't just kind of squirt it. You got to pulse it so it doesn't, because, you know, it gets very cold when it comes out of the nozzle, and the humidity in the air condenses out. And you could actually be, in effect, spraying water into your computer. Not good.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
So it is a desktop, right? It's not a laptop.
Yeah, it's a desktop.
I would probably go in there and I would disassemble it to the degree that you're taking the cables out, disconnecting from the motherboard, make a note, take a picture of where everything is. You can use a small hand vac, would be better to suck that dust out. Even a duster. We want to be careful of static electricity.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use compressed air, but just use it judiciously and pulse it.
Mm-hmm.
And then reconnect the cables. It could merely be that the cables have shaken loose for the optical drives. The fact that they're both dead kind of indicates that to me. It's unlikely they'd both die.
Yeah, well, I kind of thought that too. That seemed kind of strange that they're both dead. I was also wondering if maybe the cable itself is bad.
Could be, although less likely, but also possible.
Yeah.
And they're cheap to get IDE cables if you can find them.
I've managed to find a place that's got
it. I'll be honest, you go down to Fry's, you can get a DVD drive for $5.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're very cheap. So, you know, but make sure you get an IDE one, not a SATA. All the new computers are SATA, right?
Yeah, I know.
But, I think you should clean it out. I've used my Dyson. I have a, you know, Dyson stick, you know, handheld battery vacuum, and I put the small attachment on it, the little crevice nozzle. That works pretty well, just to draw it out. Be careful not to knock stuff loose.
Yeah.
But that's why you're going to disassemble it so you can get all of that crud out of there.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea to but you want to suck, not blow. Blowing it just blows the stuff around.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Hey, good luck. I think putting Linux on it is a very good idea. You go to Ubuntu.com. The other thing is, if you can boot this thing via a USB drive, you don't even need the optical drives. You can
problem. I have not been able to boot it from the USB.
Okay.
I've looked everywhere in
it's
there.
It's probably a firmware issue. It's probably just too old to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that's most of the Linuxes can be installed either from a USB key or a optical disk. Doing that is going to bring that machine back to life, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, that's what I was hoping.
Yeah, yeah, and it's good. It's going to be robust. It'll be secure. Yeah, it's a good choice.
Yeah, I wanted to also tell you this, Leo. I'm calling you on Skype.
Sounds great.
But believe it or not, I'm actually using an iPhone and my Wi-Fi.
Wow.
Yeah.
This sounds very, it sounds very good, Travis. It's probably better than half the phone calls we've been getting.
My iPhone, and I've already got it on my computer, and when I signed in with my username and password, boom, there was my screen of my contact list.
Isn't that nice? Yeah, I use Skype on my iPhone and my Android phones.
It works great.
I even paid a little extra to get a Skype phone number, so I can use my my iPad mini, for instance, as a telephone. Yeah, that's great.
I'll be honest with you, using the iPhone works better than my computer.
I know. Well, that computer particularly. Travis, good luck. Hey, it's great talking to you. I really appreciate it. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Next, Joe in Kansas City. Joe, do you have Google Internet?
No, I do not. Unfortunately, I used to live in the city, and I left for the suburbs, and I have been kicking myself because I hear it's good. The people that have it, they love it.
I'm so jealous.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, Austin's next, and then they're slowly rolling it out. I think Provo, Utah after that.
But we're Google crazy out here. I'm Google crazy without it, so it's all good.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what, Leo. I am at a Walmart, and you're the highlight of my visit right now. So,
what is the highlight? Where you're leaving is the highlight.
Well, exactly. Yeah. That and talking to you. So, I tell you what, this is what I have. I have a two-hour radio show on the weekends. It's called Neon Jazz with Joe Domino. It's on a Ma and Pop station. And what I want to do is I want to put it on the Internet.
That's awesome.
I don't want to pay, and I know the music cops are out there looking, and I want to do it legal, I want to do it free, and I want to put it out there. So if anybody wants to listen to the show, have a decent fan base, I can do it, and I know you're the guy that has the answer.
Yeah, because, of course, when you license music, and I'm sure the radio station licenses the music that you're playing. They pay ASCAP BMI fees. But that's for broadcast. And right. As soon as you go to the Internet, you have to pay a different set of fees.
Right.
A lot of radio stations do that, by the way, but a small mom and pop may not see the percentage in it.
Right.
So there is a way to do this where they pay the fees for you. It's live365.com.
Okay.
They set it up to take care of licensing and so forth. There are free accounts, but generally you'll probably want a paid account. Maybe you can get the station to pay the $5 a month or whatever. It's not super expensive. But that takes care of the licensing requirements. You do have to license it. You know, we play music on this show, even though we're using it only as short bumper music. We pay ASCAP BMA licenses. You just have to. You can't. You're paying the publisher for the right to use the music. Live 365, though, is a very. I think it's the best way to do this. They make it very easy to set it up and so forth. They have about, they say, 5,000 stations now on Live 365. Live365.com, and they have a free trial, so you can see how it works and so forth. You play it through your laptop usually. It's a good choice. Live365.com. Pete in Brooksville, Florida. Hi, Pete. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Pete. Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just great. Thanks for taking my call. I am the most frustrated person on the planet. I've got a...
That's saying a lot, by the way.
Oh, yeah, let me tell you. First of all, I'm 73, and I'm not very computer literate. But anyway, just enough to get myself in trouble.
Yeah, that could be really... If you want to get frustrated, a computer is a great place to start.
Oh, tell me about it.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, I've got a Lenovo. Are they a good computer, Lenovo?
Yeah, very good.
Okay, I bought it. I just bought it not too long ago, about a year ago. And I'm trying to hook up... I have a tablet... Verizon.
Okay, hold on just a sec. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back. You're first off the runway when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last segment of the Cinco de Mayo edition of the Tech Guy Show. We've been talking to Pete in Brooksville, Florida.
Yeah, Leo, I'm back.
Okay, so tell me what can I do for you?
Okay, here's what's going on, and I hope you can help me because nobody else has been able to. Anyway, I've got a cut to the chase. I'm with Verizon, been with them for a long, long time, and they talked me into a Samsung Galaxy tablet. And the only reason I use it, I'm in a rural area, and I use it to connect my computer to the hotspot. That's all I use it for, the hotspot. When I first bought it, it worked great. After about 2 months, It started dropping me.
I don't know why they sold you a tablet, because really you could have bought one of those little MiFi cards and used that instead.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I had a MiFi 2200.
Yeah.
It worked great.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we have a motorhome. I take that. We go off.
Yeah, it's a great solution. It's just a little, it's like the size of a credit card. It picks up the 3G or 4G network and makes it a Wi-Fi hotspot for up to 5 devices.
Exactly. I have one, and it works fine. But the problem is they charge me $50 a month. And the guy said, if you want a tablet, they got them on sale for $200, and we'll only charge you $30 a month.
Oh, well, that's a good reason to do it.
I thought so, too, so I did it.
I got my Verizon rep in here. So that makes sense. So he saved $20 a month on the Wi-Fi. There's no reason. Now, the Samsung might not be quite as fast as a Wi-Fi. Sometimes there's more overhead in a... and a tablet, but now you're saying it's not reliable.
Well, here's what's happening. I got the first one and worked fine for about 2 months. Then it started not working. So they sent me another one, and the same thing. It started working great, and then eventually it started dropping the signal. You know, and then I sent that back. This is my third one in a year and a half.
Maybe that's why it's $20 cheaper. I don't know. That seems like
I know.
That doesn't seem like a good idea. I don't know why it's not working. I don't know why it's not working. I really, that's, it shouldn't. Maybe it's getting tired. I don't know. I that's beyond me. I don't know why. It should, is it 3G or 4G?
It's 3G.
It's not LTE. So
no,
it's 3G.
Let me tell you something else. The guy at Verizon said they were having trouble with these. The internal antenna was giving them trouble.
Yeah, it sounds like it's failing.
Yeah.
But at least they're giving you a new one for free, right?
Well, they've given me three of them. But
Verizon is not is you're getting a you should not be complaining. Not only are you getting cheaper 3G connection, but you now had three tablets. They just keep replacing them.
Well, yeah, they're not going to do it anymore, and I can't.
Yeah.
To get my email.
Yeah. Maybe go back to that. I don't know what the. I mean, there's nothing I can help you with. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what's wrong. Change the phone number of the device. All right. Maybe so. This is an interesting, and I wouldn't have known this, but fortunately, we have somebody just happened to have somebody in the studio who works there. He said sometimes the phone, it depends on the exchange. The phone number may not work as well with the tower. You might try, just go up back to Verizon and say, could you just give me a different number for this device? You may not realize this, but even though it's not a phone, everything that is on the 3G network has a phone number. Get a, believe it or not, it doesn't matter if you get a different phone number. But change it. Nobody's calling that number, so there's no problem changing it. Might work. Otherwise, I have no idea. I mean, how can I tell? It's failing. It's breaking. Let's see. Isaac in Banning? Is that right? Hi, Isaac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Banning?
Yeah, it's in Banning.
Banning. Hello. Banning, Georgia?
No, California.
California. Okay. What can I do for you, Isaac?
Well, actually, I was just calling in reference to the guy who was trying to scan from his Epson printers to his iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Epson has an app called Epson iPrint.
Yeah.
It actually has a link in there to you actually where you can scan directly from your...
You're kidding. I didn't know that. Well, that's cool. Yeah. So if you have an Epson printer, it has to be a multifunction printer with built-in scanning capability, and it's an AirPrint-compatible printer, which, by the way, I have an Epson Workforce, and all of that's true. I could then use the iPrint on my phone to scan.
Well, you can, it's another app you download. It's an iPrint app.
I see, but it's for scanning.
It was originally designed for printing on the Epson printers.
Yeah, it's before you had AirPrint, you had to get a special application, right?
Correct.
So now that application is still useful because it'll scan as well.
Yes.
Awesome.
So.
Thank you so much for letting us know. I appreciate it. We're all helping each other, Isaac. Thank you. Take care.
Have a good day.
You too. Sandy in San Clemente. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Sandy.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Oh, really good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. What can I do for you?
Okay. Our daughter is in law school, and she's going this summer to China with her law class.
How exciting is that?
It is, and for me, it's a little apprehensive.
You know what I did? My daughter was in high school, and she went to France for a year.
I remember that.
You know what I did? I set her up with Skype.
Yeah, she didn't want to take her computer because she's had other students say that they've had their computer stolen.
Yeah.
And she has her whole life on it, so she's
yeah.
not
taking. Okay. She taking a smartphone?
She has a smartphone, but I called Verizon. Verizon told me, you know, you really need to leave that on plane mode and don't use it at all because it's so expensive to use it.
Here's when she can use it. Wi-Fi.
Okay.
It won't cost her anything to use her smartphone on Wi-Fi. It only costs money when you're using 3G data, you know, cell data in China. And yes, it costs a lot. So the advice was very good, but it's not quite right. Don't put it in airplane mode. Check the box that says turn off data roaming.
Oh, wait. Let me write that down.
Turn off data roaming.
Off data roaming, okay.
And what happens is it says, well, I'm not on Verizon network anymore. I can't get data. Never mind. But the Wi-Fi will work. And so when she's at her hotel or if she's staying with a family, they'll probably have Wi-Fi. She can do that. In fact, it's going to be better for Skype calls. I made Skype calls when I was in China, but I only did it in the hotel because you're absolutely right. It was too expensive to do it via 3G.
Okay, so she can take her phone with her.
Yes.
Okay, all right. My husband's here, and we're both a little technologically challenged, and he's pointing me to his phone. You're saying the iPhone, right?
iPhone, Android phone, any phone, yeah. Any smartphone.
Smartphone.
Yeah, iPhone's fine, yeah.
Okay, he's looking at me like, no, we don't have one of those, and I'm going,
well, what does your daughter have?
She has the Verizon, the newest one. We just got it in December, iPhone.
Yeah. Perfect.
It's a smartphone, iPhone, what is it?
Yeah, it's a smartphone. It's an iPhone. I don't know what it is, but it's a smartphone. It's just got apps on it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a smartphone. Either one. Get Skype. Tell her put Skype on it. But most importantly, while she's traveling, turn off data roaming.
Turn off data roaming.
Yeah,
okay.
She'll see that in the settings. And that means that all of a sudden, see, what happens is you say, well, I'm not going to use data, but your phone is because it's going to get the email, it's going to check in on stuff, and then all of a sudden you get a $1,000 bill when you get home.
So, okay, so as long as you're on, turning off the roaming.
And just use the Wi-Fi. That's it, Sandy. Hey, great to talk to you. Tell your daughter have a great time. Thank you all for joining me. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.